This is the Scottish Football Marketing Podcast. On this show, we welcome Ross County Chief Executive Stephen Ferguson. Stephen made the transition from co-manager to Chief Executive last summer, and we wanted to find out more about that transition and his plans for the club. Speaking as someone who grew up in the Highlands, it was good to shine a spotlight on the club doing some great work in the Highlands community. Enjoy the show.
Welcome to the latest episode of the Scottish Football Marketing Podcast. I'm Chris Sampson from Sports Marketing Scotland, and I'm with the Scottish FA's digital manager, Michael Bockel. How are we, Michael?
I'm good, Chris. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad as well. Our unofficial kind of mini-series continues today, and we're speaking to Ross County CEO Stephen Ferguson. There's plenty to discuss, so I think we're just going to get right into it. Stephen, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, guys. Thank you.
No problem at all. How are you today? Not too bad?
Yeah, we're well. We're fine. Weather's good, so we're preparing for Saturday night.
Good stuff, good stuff. Give us a bit of an introduction to yourself, just to kick us off.
Well, I'm obviously the CEO up at Ross County now. I've probably been involved in football nearly 30 years since I left the school. I've played across all the leagues in Scotland and done a career ended pretty quickly in regarding injuries and stuff, so started to focus more on coaching, done a bit of coaching at Stenhouse Muir in the Scottish FA, and then predominantly spent the rest of the time back up here at Ross County, where I've taken up a number of roles and find myself in the CEO role at the current time.
Obvious starting question for me then is, how did you find that transition from sort of co-manager to chief executive?
Listen, it's doesn't need me to say it's a completely different role. I've went from everything predominantly being on pitch and focusing on and around everything football to a broader spectrum of things that I have to focus on across all departments of the football club. So it's completely different from the role that I had previous. But in a previous life, I'd done a wee bit more of across the department kind of remit when I was the academy director and focused on certainly different bits other than just football when I was doing that. So it's not completely alien, but it's just one that I find myself doing at the moment, and that's the task that I have in front of me.
Yeah, I was going to ask you quickly as well, was the move to CEO one that you did always want to make? And I know there is some kind of specific qualifications out there in football as well for people that look to make this move kind of upstairs into the business side of the game as well. Have you been working on any of those at all as well?
I've got to be honest, until it was put to me just 9 months ago or so, I hadn't really gave it any thought, if I'm being brutally honest. We were focusing fully on being co-manager at the football club alongside Stuart Kettlewell. So the chairman and the board had a plan and had a different remit for us and a different structure they wanted within the football department. So this was put to us and it was one that we thought about and obviously seen that was the direction that the chairman and the board were wanting to go on. So we tried to embrace it as much as we can. But in regard to me preparing myself for it, then no. I mean, I'd focus fully on my education being a football education. I did complete the pro license back in 2016, I think it was, and that's that course. Anybody that's aware of that course knows that it's not as much on the pitch, and it's more looking at the off pitch stuff as well as the dealing with different departments and different facets of the game, not just on the football pitch. So that was as much as I had previous before I took the role. I have to say, though, obviously, now that I am in the role, I'm certainly tapping into and using as many of the resources through the chairman's business and regarding that business side of the job. And I'm grateful for that. But certainly from my point of view, it may be something I look to do if I feel that will be of benefit to us. But at the moment, I'm leaning pretty much on instinct and on the way I think it should be done and watching people and listening to people and making my own coming to my own conclusion, I suppose, and the direction that I feel it would be. But I do have that support around me from the wider board here at Ross County.
It must be a kind of great feeling and one that you probably take quite a bit of pride on as well, to have that backing from the board for them to have this role set out for you as well. Is that something you've thought about at all?
Listen, we know how difficult football is, and especially football management. And at the time, I was joking with people because people were saying, "Oh, you've been moved upstairs, or you've been moved aside, or is it a promotion, or is it a demotion?" I was still trying to work out what it actually was, the direction I was going. But certainly, it is. I'm grateful for the opportunity. It was one like Stuart and I were comfortable in what we were doing, but I think it was well documented that, even though we had great success in regarding winning the league championship and winning the Iron Brew Cup at the time, and staying in the Premier League, which was what was the task was given to Stuart and I when we took the manager's job or the co-manager's job, and we managed to hit all the milestones, which was fantastic. But as always, the ball keeps rolling, and you never really know what's round the corner. And this change was put to us that this was the direction we were going, and the type of people Stuart and I are, we had to figure a way out how that was going to work and get on with it, I suppose.
One last one for me for the moment. Have you been able to successfully remove yourself from that dugout mentality? Obviously, you mentioned you had a fair bit of success as co-managers, and having been co-manager for so long as well. Have you been able to kind of step aside from that and remove yourself from that feeling?
I think it's almost dragging yourself away initially. I think anybody that's been involved in the predominantly the football side for such a long period of time, to then not have that fix, so to speak, of being hands-on and being able to influence things as it happens rather than hear about things retrospectively. So that from that point, it was a challenge. And still is a challenge, but my focus and what I'm getting asked to take responsibility for is no longer on pitch. So I need to accept that, and I need to come up with a way and find a way, which I feel I have, that I'm able to still have an influence and still be a huge support to the football side, but probably have that time and distance from it that you can look at the bigger picture and you can look more strategically at what my role is and the direction of the club that the chairman and the board and I believe is the correct decision and this the correct direction, I should say, for our football club.
How did you approach particularly those first few months in the new role and that need to get up to speed with perhaps obviously the non-footballing side that maybe you weren't across as much?
Yeah, listen, that was always going to be the challenge. You know, you feel completely comfortable in the football side, and I suppose it's probably the opposite way for many CEOs or many guys that are in my position where they come in it from a business side and I've came in it from a purely footballing side. So I've got the benefit of having experience and worked for a long period of time in the football side. So, you know, it's just natural that my challenge was always going to be away from the football. And there's no CEO manual. There's nothing that somebody gives you and says, listen, this is how you do this job. But I believe there's no manual for any job. You need to go and get your hands dirty, and you need to go and be willing to make mistakes and put your head above the parapet when needed and actually pin your thoughts and pin your hat to something and you need to be have thick skin and you realise that you're not going to please everybody and you need to realise that you're not going to get everything right. But I suppose the way I've tried to do it is again, learn from other people and learn from other clubs, communicate as well as I can to everybody that I can, which has been difficult due to circumstances, but it's one that I believe that's to be a success in this role is something that I'm going to need to do. So this last 9 months has been very much, every day's been a school day. You know, you're learning all the time. And I think it would have been like that even if COVID wasn't here. But it's certainly been that with COVID here. And I've not been in this role without COVID. So that could be seen as a positive or a negative because I've not really seen it any other way, other than the fact of dealing with a pandemic and dealing with the stuff that comes along with that at our club. So it's been an eye-opener. It's been a challenge, but I'm certainly no different to anybody else or at any other club.
Yeah, we'll get on to some kind of COVID-specific questions later on. You talked about lessons you've learnt there. Is there anything that you wish you'd known before taking the role?
Nothing glaring that you've not been able to deal with in time or given it some thought. So I believe that the communication thing is key, and I believe that that's probably a big part of the why I was given this role, was obviously to try and join things up and be able to communicate across the full spectrum at the football club. The transferable skills between speaking to people in football and speaking to people out of football, it's still there. It's still the same thing. You know, football's a brilliant icebreaker, as we all know, and it's always the topic of conversation wherever you go. And to be able to transfer and deliver to communicate with all sorts of people through that is obviously a huge benefit. The one thing that, again, from a personal point of view, is just the current climate and the environment that we're all in. The, you know, the HR side is huge. You know, football clubs and dressing rooms, you know, and you've been involved in through the years, it's not always that PC environment. It's not all that, always that HR environment. And when you step over to this role, it's such a big part in making sure that everybody, all employees and all customers and everybody is looked after in the right way and in the proper way and have that support around them. And I suppose that, and it's my job to make sure that we have a team of people that can deliver that, not only for our own staff and our own people, but for our supporters in the wider community as well.
And if we move on to Ross County as a club, Stephen, you know, we've got listeners that actually listen beyond just within Scotland as well. For those who might not have a full knowledge of the club, can you tell us a bit more about Ross County?
I certainly can. And regarding, identity and all that stuff, all these words are thrown about regularly in regarding every club, but certainly where we are, we're very much a community-based club. We're very much a club that's we have a chairman that's invested heavily in making it the heart of their community and our community, and it's very much a club that believe in its people and the people that support it and the people that work within it and the people that are around it. So if I was to sum it up in one word, it's definitely a community, because that's what the chairman's legacy. That's the legacy that the chairman wants for this area and for his club. We also believe that we have a strong focus on our academy and our community programs, because we understand that academies, as we know it, is about developing people to play in your first team. And thankfully, we've been able to do that a number of times. But it's much more, it's much bigger than that. It's much wider than that, and we need to give opportunities to kids in our area. Quite a vast area in regard to size and distance that they have to travel, but we need to make sure that we can give everybody an opportunity to enjoy football and be involved in football and feel that they're part of something for the Highlands and for the north of Scotland, as well as from a professional first team point of view. Again, our identity would be that we understand where we are in the food chain and the pecking order, and we see that we're a fantastic club with great facilities that are well equipped to develop young, hungry players that would benefit our club, but then in turn will help them progress their own personal careers and their journey and their football pathway. So we believe that that's what our club is about and that's what we stand for, and we try very, very hard to work towards that.
And I mean, the club's based obviously in Dingle, which, I mean, I think the population's something like 5,000, 5,500, I think. How does, you mentioned that community aspect, but how's the club established itself within the Highland region? And because, I mean, Inverness is just down the road, obviously, who are just a division below you at the moment in time. Has it really been sort of those community activities that has helped establish the club?
Yeah, I think it is. In a nutshell, I think it is that engagement with and our connection with our community, and not just our community around Dingwall. You're right. I think, I know it's said often enough, but I mean, we've got more seats in our stadium than we have people in Dingwall. So that shows how much we are punching above our weight by competing in the Premier League. And that's been the case for a number of years in regard the size of us and the geographic area that we have to cover, that we call our area, because that obviously encompasses the highlands as well as the islands, and we feel that we have a duty to care to that community as well. We've been the most northerly club in the Scottish League. We take great pride in that bit, actually, and we also look at it from, again, that point of view, where the engagement that we've had through the years with our supporters is the club, through the chairman, he is the driver in it all in regarding that engagement with his community, and we always feel that we get lots from the community, and we feel that we need to always try and give more back than what we get, and we pride ourselves in trying to do that. I mean, through the COVID period, we've focused on, you know, we focused on that calling round all the over 65s and making sure that they had that regular contact from the football club. We looked at a For Our People campaign. We were anybody that was struggling regarding food packages and delivering toys at Christmas time, and the one that we've recently launched is this check-in and chat, where you can nominate somebody that's maybe struggling with a second wave of lockdown, and seeing if we can reach out, whether it be a player, whether it be a manager, whether it be a member of the coaching staff, or whether it be a member of the backroom staff. We feel that we have a part to play in reaching out to the community in these challenging times.
Stephen, take us through kind of the setup behind the scenes at the club then, in terms of the team. You've mentioned them a few times, but on the commercial side and the marketing side, and then on the community staff as well.
Yeah, I mean, we feel we do, and I already touched on punching above your weight. I genuinely feel that we do that on a day-to-day basis. We do a hell of a lot with a small team. It's a passionate team, but if you look at the team that we've got, we're sitting with maybe three full-time staff within our commercial department. We've got three full-time staff within our community department, and we've got a brand development officer and communications officer that obviously tries to tie the two of them up when that message is going out. So I know lots of clubs will have much more staff, but we feel that fits with our football club, it fits within our budget, and we feel we still manage to get everything ticked. And we have a lot of guys that we have a lot of great volunteers, we have a lot of guys that work on, you know, zero-hour kind of contracts when needed. They're always available, and I think it's a testament to that relationship we do have with our community and with our people up here, that we were the first club to complete the testing when it came out for COVID. We were the first club to get back on training ground and get our academy up and going. We were the first club to get supporters back into the ground, and then we were the first club to get continued supporters on the ground where we got that four games where we thought that we were getting out of it and before we slipped back into it. So all that takes a lot of work behind the scenes, and it takes a lot of people that probably don't get the credit they deserve for the amount of time and effort that they put in. And we're really, really grateful as a football club that we have a number of people like that do have the best interests of the football club and the area and are willing to go above and beyond when it's needed.
You talk about obviously the need and all the hard work that goes in behind the scenes. Are you then somebody that gets heavily involved with all aspects, or do you try to let others get on with it?
I think anybody that knows me or knows anybody that's around with the club, I think everybody's willing to muck in if they need to. It's probably one of the biggest learning curves from myself in regarding where you were always first just to jump in and go and help and go and influence it where you could. And I've made a conscious effort of standing back and trusting the guys that we've got in place who are more than capable of moulding things and directing things and changing things, and knowing that I'm there for that support mechanism for them, but giving them that freedom to express their self as well. So I've had a quiet word in my ear a few times where to back off sometimes and let people go and do what they're paid to do and do what they're very good at doing. So although, to answer your question, yeah, if it needs to get your hands dirty and you need to muck in, then I'm 100% willing to do that across all the departments. But the bit I am learning is to trust the people that are in post and give them their place by letting them go and shape their own department and drive their own department with the support of me and the board and the chairman coming behind them.
From the outside looking in, Stephen, is I look at a CEO of a Scottish Premiership club and think that they've got the biggest task list that is probably going. How do you balance and prioritise everything on that task list? How do you determine what takes the highest importance for you to tackle first?
That's a great question, because I think you're right as well. And because of the size of our club, especially playing in the Premier League, you are the wide range of stuff that you've got to deal with is so vast in regard that it can literally go from one end of the spectrum to the next within minutes and within an hour of the day. So it has been switched up, it has been organised and having a plan that it's difficult to stick to that plan sometimes, but again, it's easier to diverse if you do have that kind of direction of travel and plan. But timescales will dictate it. You know, everything at the moment is making sure that it's COVID friendly and we don't get caught out with anything COVID, because everybody will appreciate that that's the topic of everybody's conversation. But you do have to plan ahead, and then you do have to, I feel, almost traffic light things in regard and listen, that can wait just now, and that's maybe one for next week, and there's certainly things that need to be dealt with immediately. So I found it best that I do have that plan and I do have that strategy written down that I know what is priority, and I focus on making sure that we get what needs done and done well, and then we can look at the medium term, and then the longer term ones can obviously still be there and still be worked on, but make sure that we do what needs done first and foremost.
One of the high priorities for clubs, I'm sure, is attempting to get fans back into the stadiums across the country. You mentioned that Ross County managed it for a period of time, but on the flip side to that, Ross County TV obviously got set up and streaming has been high on the priority list so far this season. How was the process in getting Ross County TV set up this season?
We had a discussion right at the start about what kind of model we were going to go with the Ross County TV, and the chairman and the board decided that we wanted a proper production and we wanted a proper presentation team, and the club, in fairness to the chairman and the board, invested heavily in making sure Ross County TV was a good spectacle to watch every week. So Dale Pride McDonald, who's our communications and our branding officer, he was the driver in that one. He was left very much to go and shape that and put that in place, because we hadn't had it before. So it was a blank canvas for him. I'm sure he gave him a number of sleepless nights, but he'd done a wonderful job in getting that tied up and set up. And we put a presentation team in with the likes of Stevie Cragan, Jamie Lyle, Rory Hamilton, all guys that are well known across that football spectrum and in the delivery a TV structure. So we did invest in that, and we wanted it to be a good product for the supporters, because we were hoping we would have got fans back into the ground. We did have supporters supporting us by buying their season ticket, and we just felt that if they couldn't get into the games, if we could give them the best TV option that we could, then that would be the next best thing for them. So we've managed to put together productions with the pre-show, with a half-time show. We've also done a couple of one-off specials that are kind of almost like a behind-the-scenes kind of look at what's going on during this time, and chat with the manager and chat with players and the chairman and like. So we feel that we've invested heavily in it, but we feel that our supporters have appreciated it. We feel that it's been well supported by our supporters, and we feel that it was the right thing to do with the money that we've spent to give that viewing, the quality of the viewing experience for our supporters. And listen, we've no regrets with how we've done our TV this season.
Have you managed to have any thoughts yet about how Ross County TV might look once fans are back?
Yeah, we've had some discussion around it. And again, listen, it is difficult because, I mean, there's a lot of, I know people are getting a lot of the games on different streaming platforms, and whether they're illegal or illegal, but, it, you know, it's there's certainly very, very difficult to manage. You know, there's links that fly about that give people access to the games and stuff as well. So that's one thing that's probably been the downside in regarding the TV, where you want it to be that exclusive, and yeah, just for our TV and just for our supporters and the people that want to buy into watching the production that we've put together. It has unfortunately been out there for where we are not getting the benefit back in regarding people paying for pay-per-view or certainly just for one-off streams of what we're doing on Ross County TV. But it's one that we are looking at, and it's one that if we can come up with a sustainable model for the following year, then we would definitely look at it, because there's been so many positives in regarding even just, you know, we've had a lot of great feedback from sponsors that have, obviously there's no supporters on the ground, but they're seeing the coverage that they're getting on the Ross County TV and the audience that's watching the Ross County TV, and they've been more than happy with the money that they've put in for their sponsorship, for the coverage that they're getting. So there has been so many positives, but it's probably a thing that we'll review again properly, and we'll put together a plan for how that will look moving forward next season.
Has Ross County TV then helped have some of those maybe perhaps difficult conversations with sponsors and partners because of obviously the current situation and them not getting the sort of normal rights that maybe they would perhaps anticipated?
Yeah, definitely. And it's always going to be that kind of struggle to come up with a package that suits everybody, and the package that suits their investment. And I have to say that we've been really, really well supported by our local businesses and our sponsors in regarding that. There's almost been an acceptance that we are given as much as we can possibly give at this time. And they understand that it's not perfect and it's not the normal and it's not maybe what they've had in the past, but it is one that they're fully behind the football club, and it's almost that, yeah, they understand the circumstances and we understand that their businesses and their lives may be affected as much as football's been affected and probably is getting affected as much as football. So there's that common understanding that it isn't normal, but it is what it is, and we need to stick together and try to support each other as best as we can and keep walking towards that light at the end of the tunnel, and hopefully we get back to some more normality where we can properly thank and engage our supporters and our sponsors again like we have done previously.
Yeah, Michael kind of alluded to it there in terms of difficult conversations around partners, but if you rewind to almost this time last year, actually, as we're recording this, obviously we're getting to a point where no football was about to be played for a significant period of time. What was the club doing during that period, and did it help put together any longer-term plans for Ross County going forward?
Yeah, it was a really difficult time. I think we had, again, through maybe the chairman and his own business, that we had a foresight and thinking that, listen, this could be here for a while, and we really need to get into what we would call a survival mode and make sure that we can have a sustainable model that if the worst is the worst and we don't have supporters for a year, which is looking like that is what's going to happen, we as a football club made that decision early that we needed to make sure that we were sustainable and we needed to make sure that we were still a functioning football club when we come out the other side of this. And we did feel, without being overly negative and doom and gloom, that this wasn't just going to be a flash in the pan. It was going to be a little bit more than that, and it was going to affect us a bit more than maybe what we were, you know, the blue sky thinking that some were having was that maybe not going to be the case. So we did look at restructuring the football club. We did look at streamlining and losing a lot of, you know, maybe what we call corporate hours and regarding, you know, the hands-on day-to-day stuff. And we tried to come up with a model that that would have us still in survival mode and still fighting for everything we can get, but still functioning and still able to compete where we need to compete.
Do you think when things do get back to kind of normal, in inverted commas, do you expect to see from fans like a greater interest in attending matches, or are you a little bit more fearful that, that clubs and Ross County in particular might have lost a few along the way?
Yeah, I do. If you're me personally, I do have concerns. I do have concerns in regarding that. I mean, your diehards and your football guys that you'll still. I'm not saying that everybody's going to switch off that, but my concern is we're going to need to switch on a percentage of the supporters that were switched on before that are now switched off, and that's because maybe they found something else to do on a Saturday. Maybe they're comfortable in watching it on the television. Maybe. They've realised the savings and no travelling and no attending actually live matches in the game and you've got to, we as a football club and Scottish football in general, we find a way of, again, engaging with the ones that maybe have taken their eye off the ball a little bit or maybe have lost that drive to go and watch live football, and it's our job, it's everybody's job to make sure that we can reignite that and get them back. And get them back as quick as we can. I, without being too doom and gloom, I still believe we'll have the crux of people dying to come back in and watch live football. That's in their blood, that's in their DNA, so to speak. But I do personally have some concerns that there may be supporters that will have switched off to it. And I do have concerns about young players as well. I mean, academy players or grassroots football, 12 months, a long time to go without regular football if you're a young player, and whether that be a boy or a girl, or whether it be an 8-year-old or a 14-year-old, it doesn't matter. We again, as a football club and as Scottish football as a whole, we need to make sure that we have stuff in place that we can relight that fire within young players that football is what they want to be doing and what they want to be partaking in, whether it be on a performance level or whether it be on a participation level. And we need to make sure that we're catering for absolutely everybody and giving them that opportunity to fall back in love with the game.
Have you managed to transition any of those sort of concerns and thoughts into actual plans or ideas for how you might try and attract people back, whether it's fans to the game or players?
I mean that is the million-dollar question in regarding how. I mean, it's easy to talk about this is what we need to do. It's the big question is how do you do it? Giving yourself a platform and that sustainable model that we were speaking about does give us an opportunity to reach out. It does give us an opportunity to make sure that we can have programs and we can have value for money, and we can have things that people want to be involved in and people want to be part of, because sometimes I think that's the route that we're going to need to go down in regarding the product. The winning the game on a Saturday is always going to be the biggest driver for supporters, and we totally understand that, but we need to make sure that we have something that our supporters can believe in, something that supporters can get behind, and something they feel that they're part of. We launched a Staggies Army during this corona period, and it was pretty much one where we were looking for our fans to come as one big supporters group, in regarding that we're all in this together, and whether it be a personal thing or whether it be a football thing or whether it be, it didn't matter what it was, that everybody was going through a difficult time together, and together we would be stronger. And listen, that's been fantastic for us. The uptake from our supporters and our community, some obviously season ticket holders have bought into that as well, but they've also, our wider community have realised the importance of that and got behind that as well. So initiatives like that will definitely help, and given ownership to and given somebody something that they can believe in, till we get them back on the pitch and we can start to get them back through the turnstiles, which is then would speed that up in regarding being part of something and getting behind something.
Stephen, is there any kind of, we've touched on Ross County TV, we've touched on fans getting back into the stadium hopefully soon. Is there any other kind of big off-pitch objectives that you want to concentrate on over time? Is there anything you can share with us there? Any spoilers? Or does it actually come back to kind of depending on how this season ends up before all that can be put in place?
Yeah, I still think there's so much uncertainty to come. Obviously, we've got a season to finish, and thankfully, it looks like we're going to be able to finish that season. Touch wood that there's not going to be any other delays or call offs in regarding games, etc. So, the uncertainty bit's still there. And we've taken this time to really look at how we're going to communicate moving forward. And we've really done a big exercise in regarding our databases and moving a lot of the stuff that has dropped away because we've not been able to have that one-to-one contact. We've moved a lot of stuff online, and we've restructured a lot of our the things that we offer and what we play to fit into the current time. So we feel there's been a good body of work already done there that we'll benefit from moving forward, that we've had a little bit of time to be able to do it. And you know, that digital age has certainly been, it was the direction of travel anyway, but this period, I think everybody will tell you, and regarding, we used to be constantly up and down the 9 to 10 meetings, whether it be at Hampden or other football clubs, where everything's now been done online, and whether it be done on Zoom or Teams meetings or things, it's certainly brought, in many ways, it's brought everybody a little bit closer together. And for many ways, it's put Ross County on a more level playing field than they would normally be, because it would have normally been a 3-hour trip down the road and a 3-hour trip back up the road, where we are now on that level playing field and sharing information and sharing good practice and being involved in the discussion. So there has been a lot of good stuff going on. We would like to continue to grow that army at our football club, so to speak, where we are all in it together and we are all pushing in the right direction, because I think we're as important to the community and our supporters as the supporters are to us, and it's very much a two-way thing. And the best way that we can really strengthen that and develop that is by how we communicate. And we've put a lot of work in, like I've already said, and making sure that our databases and how we contact and how we're able to communicate will definitely, whatever direction we take next season, will definitely have us in a better position than we were before COVID seemed to have us.
I'm sure that's one that Michael and I and everybody listening as well keep an eye on for any changes that we spot there. Finish us up, Stephen, with anything that you would want to change about Scottish football. So we asked Alan Burrows from Motherwell this, and he suggested summer football. But if you have another idea, then feel free. Now's your time.
Listen, I'm pretty traditionalist in regarding my thinking. I thought football was good. I like how football was. I liked how it used to be as well. But I understand that things are changing all the time. The question is a good one. I would like to see that the managers can be sat during out with a transfer window. I think that that period of time where we can't shift players until the transfer window's open again, I think it would be a good idea that we don't sack managers or we don't relieve managers of their duties. The only time you can do that is within that window of opportunity. And I think that would be, I would introduce that if it was me that was running the place. But I don't know what you think of that, but I think it would be, it would certainly be a nice, or something that we could give managers the benefit of the doubt in regarding that security for at least from window to window. I don't know, another one could be, can we look at full-time referees in Scotland? I don't know, I know that that's been spoken about a number of times, but again, I feel that accountability, I think the referees have the hardest job in football, and I always think, how can we help them? You know, we're looking at VAR, that's going to be in Scottish football anytime soon, which might be a good thing as well, but can we help them by making it that's their sole focus and that's their 9-to-5 job, so to speak, that's what they're doing on a day-to-day basis, and they're living it and breathing it just as football managers and football players are. I don't know if that would be a positive change for Scottish football or a realistic one. It might not be financially doable, but it might be something I would look at.
The manager transfer window would certainly make things interesting, wouldn't it?
Well, again, it's that one. It's readily the turnaround of managers, whether it be in our league or any other league, and there's no real rhyme or reason to any of it. Again, it might think about it might give managers a chance to implement more of the stuff that they were given the job for in the first place, if they had that given time that nothing could happen within X amount of periods. But again, I don't know. It's just it'd be something to talk about, I suppose.
I think I posted on Twitter the other day about manager loans as well, because you get loans and you get loans obviously with players, but obviously we've had Neil McCann, obviously difficult circumstances for John Robertson, but yeah, Neil McCann kind of coming in as an interim manager, it's kind of like a manager loan, but maybe that's a bit more crazy than your manager's transfer window one.
I don't know how that would work. Does the existing manager, does he get loaned out or loaned out and Gardner leave? Is that how that would work?
I have no idea. Just a crazy idea. Stephen, thank you so much for joining us. That was really great, and we got plenty out of that. And hopefully those listening know a bit more about Ross County, you know, and everything that you're trying to do there.
Great. Well, thanks for having us, guys.
No problem. Michael, I will see you next time, and thanks everybody for listening.